But those of you who are coming for the introduction to meditation class, a series of four classes where you get to learn the basics of meditation, that class is being held in the room to my right. In this class, it is the class for the experts, for the advanced, for the... No, it's a class for those where we meditate for 45 minutes usually. And so, you know, it means that you've been doing some meditation before, that you know how to sit comfortably for 45 minutes, and you don't fall fast asleep. I know that happened once when I was teaching meditation in prison, a high security jail. And everyone was meditating. Because it was high security, you had to have a prison officer with you at all times. And so when I was meditating, the others were meditating, I heard someone snoring. So I had to open my eyes, and it was the prison officer who was snoring. And one of the prisoners, his hand was already reaching over to the keys. And if I hadn't opened, as soon as I opened my eyes, he looked at me. In fact, if I hadn't opened his eyes, he'd have had those keys. Anyway, but this is for people who have done some meditation before, so, you know, don't be sort of conceited and think, oh yeah, I can meditate, you know, I can do, you know, 45 minutes, because, you know, it's tough at first to do 45 minutes. You have to learn just what to do, how to relax, basically just to know how to navigate the different obstacles of which happen in meditation. And... So the introduction to meditation class is to my right. This is the ongoing class where I keep speaking on and on and on and on. That's why it's called ongoing. But actually do be quiet once everybody has come in and settled down. But anyway, it's to navigate the different parts of meditation. Sometimes people ask me, so what type of meditation do you teach? Vipassana? Samatha, loving kindness, and the answer for those of you who've been on my retreat is the story of this couple called Vi. Her surname was Pasana, and her partner Sam Atta. Sam Atta and Vi Pasana. And one day after lunch they decided to go and have a walk up Meditation Mountain. And they took their two dogs with them. Their two dogs. One little dog was called Metta, and the other one was called Anapanasati. And so Sam Atta and Vipassana and their two dogs went up Meditation Mountain. Sam went up there, because it's so peaceful. He wanted some peace and quiet, some stillness, some calm. And Vi, she went up there because it was such a great view on top of Meditation Mountain. She took her big Canon Insight camera to get some nice wisdom shots. And what did Metta and Anapanasati, the two dogs? Dogs are just so wise. They just go up there for fun. They don't have these great goals. You know, I'm going to get enlightened. I'm going to get jhanas. They just go there because it feels good. So, Sam, Vi, and the two dogs went up Meditation Mountain. When they got halfway up, it was so peaceful up there. And Sam was so happy halfway up Meditation Mountain, it was so calm. Vi was so happy because even though it was only halfway up, she gets amazing views of the countryside around. So she took many insight shots. Metta, the dog, was getting so happy. The further it got up the mountain, the more it wagged its tail. And Anapanasati, when he got up Meditation Mountain, it was really hard to find her. You know, she was disappearing. And when they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, there it was so peaceful, so still, that Sam was just so happy. And Vi, you could see forever the whole universe spread out before you on the peak of Meditation Mountain. And that Vi was having all these incredible insights, which she photoed on her camera. And metta was, you know what it's like when dogs are really, really happy and ecstatic? They run around and wag their tail like it's going to fall off. And that's for Anapanasati. Anapanasati, the dog, couldn't find it. It disappeared. Because that's what happens on the top of Meditation Mountain. Even Sam, yes, he went up there for the stillness, but he also enjoyed the view and incredible joy and love on the top of Meditation Mountain. Even though Vai, Pasama, went up there for the insights and the views, it was still so still up there that she could experience the incredible perfect stillness as well as the joy. And little Metta, the dog, dogs have got eyes, dogs have got emotions. Yeah, Metta was just so full of the bliss of perfection, but also could see forever and could enjoy the great peace on the top of Meditation Mountain. Because the truth is, on the top of Meditation Mountain, stillness, insight, and loving kindness, joy, all live together on the top of Meditation Mountain. And the reason I put Anapanasati up there, the breath, is because the breath vanishes. It disappears. The deeper you go in meditation, it is not that you're dying. It is just you don't need the breath anymore. Why do you need to actually consume the petrol in your car when it's just sitting in the garage, perfectly motionless? Just like the body when it gets into deep meditation. It hardly breathes at all. And sometimes doesn't breathe at all. And you are perfectly safe. You don't die. You just get enlightened, that's all. So, that is how, what type of meditation we teach here. We teach the whole caboodle. In other words, but one of the most important parts of this is, yeah, they call, do you teach Samatha or Vipassana, but the metta, the loving kindness, the compassion, that is also there. And it's also always has to be there. You may not be focusing on the loving kindness, but if it's not actually coming as a support, then the meditation is not going to work. If you say, right, I'm going to be still, this is it, I am going to get into jhanas tonight or today, and that's, there's no kindness, no compassion, no softness, no gentleness there, and you'll find that hard approach to meditation. That will just get you just a hard, painful body and a hard, painful mind. That's why the people who try that hard approach, enlightenment and bust, they don't only get a painful butt, but they're a pain in the butt to everyone else they'll meet afterwards as well. A pain in the butt becomes contagious. It starts with their own butt and they pass it on to others. But that is not the path which I was taught and which I know. It's a path of kindness. How can kindness give you insight? How can kindness lead to peacefulness? Obvious, you're kind to your own body, first of all. Aware of it, feel it, understand what it's like. How is my body now? And when you feel it, you get to know it and understand it and you're kind to it, you settle all the problems. It's kindness settles the differences in the world. Care, not cure, as I keep on saying. You care for this body, and then you find out it just gets really nice, and it tends to cure itself. Problems disappear with that compassion. So, look at my body, get it nice, and how you're feeling now, and you know, try and get it just the right temperature. I'm so lucky today. It's supposed to be really hot today. But somehow or other, the heavenly beings have been very kind today and they've made it a little bit of rain so it's nice and cool. At least, it's much cooler than was expected. so you're kind. So if you, you know, you do feel a bit too hot, then I don't know, you can actually get your own little personal fan. You know, in Thailand, sometimes we have an attendant monk. You know what his job was? Venerable Nibbuto, if I get too hot, you get a fan. You keep fanning me. Is that a good idea? The trouble was that because there was one novice, he was fanning, I think, Venerable Sariputta, and he got so fed up, he hit, the teacher with the fan. So ever since then, I decided maybe that's not such a good idea. It's also one of the reasons why we don't allow people to wear shoes in the Buddhist temple. You know why? So that you've got nothing to throw at me in case I do a bad joke. Because that's, you know, quite common in Asia. They threw shoes at George W. Bush and George... But anyway, going back to the kindness, compassion. That with compassion, you find it softens things. Real compassion, like opening the door of your heart. It's a beautiful little metaphor there. You open the door of your heart unconditionally. Whatever is happening in the body, you just relax it. You find when you put conditions, you want to change it, you want to cure it, you want to get rid of this pain, you want to, a stupid body, come on, get out of here, I want to go to the deep stuff. All of that aggressive stuff is totally opposite of the kindness. And the care, the letting it be. You know, with this beautiful, caring, kind, motherly attitude. And if you can do that, you find your body relaxes so well. My body feels, oh, that feels really good. I always say that people, even last night, a bit tired last night, but nevertheless, when people have anxiety problems, they feel the tightness in their body. How do you deal with that? Just care for it. Take your hand and massage it. There, poor anxiety. And after a while, it vanishes. The kindness cures it. Mindfulness and kindness. And that's why that kindness is a really important part of the meditation. So you sit there, you're kind to your body, really looking after it. And if you need to cough, you're kind enough to the body to cough. It's important. It's nature. Just let it happen. Thank you. Good disciple. And if somebody needs to leave, they leave, they come in. Just be kind. Sometimes if somebody sort of goes away just after about 10 minutes of meditation, oh, wonderful, they've done 10 minutes. That's wonderful. I'm so happy. Maybe tomorrow they'll do 12 minutes. Instead of thinking that they should know better than this, we should lock the doors, we should make sure that no one's allowed to leave after in half an hour. We should actually have these big, no, we've got these security guards on a Friday, we should put them outside there to actually make sure that everybody doesn't move during the meditation. And nobody coughs during Ajahn Brahm's jokes. And everyone must laugh, just like in Kim Jong-un. In North Korea. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? That's not how we get people to be peaceful and calm. We have that beautiful kindness there, which means that we can just allow things to be. We're so soft. I gave this simile a long time ago, like developing a mind like a padded cell. So something hits your mind, a sound, an ache, a pain, even a thought, and it doesn't bounce back. It goes thud into the padding of the wall, and it doesn't bounce. Like events don't bounce around in your mind during the meditation. That's what kindness does. An ache, a pain, it doesn't bounce. It goes down, stops right there. So it gets absorbed into the kindness, so it doesn't rebound, which means you have lots of peace and stillness. So you look at your body, it gets nice and peaceful. Then you look at your mind, it's nice and peaceful. You know that little story about this. if she's here, oh, she could identify herself on the videos. It'd be wonderful, you know, to actually, you know, to say who you are, because it's such a long time since you told me the story. That you had this little 6 or 7 year old kid, you know, somewhere here in Perth, and the kid had a tantrum. The kids, that's what kids do. They got so fed up, they said, "Mummy, I don't love you anymore, I'm leaving home." That's what the kid said to the mummy. And the mummy said, no, she came here, so really smart person. And she said, okay, darling, I'll help you pack. And so, went into the little bedroom and packed the little six-year-old son or daughter, I forget which, I think it was a son, packed a little suitcase with all the important things necessary for life. You know, just like the Spider-Man suit, and lucky underpants, I don't know, teddy bear, whatever else, you know, it's really important. Packed the bag and said to the kid, before you go, son, let me make you a sandwich, because, you know, it's a long journey in life. And so they made the kid's favourite sandwich, put it in a brown paper bag, and there at the door of their little house, they waved their child away. Bye-bye, darling, have a wonderful life. And there the six-year-old with a suitcase in one hand and with a brown paper bag with a favourite sandwich in the other, walked off into its life at 6 years of age, the first time it left home. It went along the path, opened the garden gate and turned left. It got about maybe 50 metres, 100 metres before it felt terribly homesick, turned around and came back all by itself. Came through the garden gate, went back to the door and the mother hadn't moved. Welcome home, darling. That was called emotional intelligence. That is how kindness brings our mind back home. Stays in this moment. Doesn't wander off all over the place. Why? Because if it wants to, off you go, mine, have a nice time. So if your mind wants to go off somewhere while you're sitting here, don't forget to pack its bags and give it its favourite sandwich and say bye-bye. Because then that kindness, it will always come back to you again. That's how we develop stillness, not through force, because you're happy to be here. Why would you want to go anywhere else? And that is the secret of samadhi stillness. So kind, so beautiful here, that it wants to leave. Not force, but the delight into a body which is relaxed and a mind which is happy here. So don't you have that happiness? That's why we always take Metta the dog with us when we do our meditation. And we take Metta the dog up, it goes way up to the top of Meditation Mountain. Just enjoying. Enjoying the wonderful being free. Free of my body. Oh, wonderful. Free of all the past and the future. Oh my goodness, all the stuff which I'm supposed to do tomorrow. All the stuff which happened yesterday. Whoa, it'll drive you crazy. You think monks don't live in the real world. Whoa, we have more of a world we live in than you. Because actually you come and dump your worlds on me. I have so many worlds I'm supposed to deal with. But, who cares? I let them go. And, you know what happens? You've got a lot of trust. The opposite of peace is fear. Fear, if I don't answer my mobile phone, something terrible will go wrong. If I don't be aware of my body, if I let my breath disappear, who knows? I might be end up in the coffin. Who knows what man? If I don't sort of keep my ears open, who knows, somebody might be coming behind me to steal something. That fear is what stops us letting go. The kindness is what allows letting go to happen. So, we just sit here. Past goes. Fear goes. All that, and fear means the future goes as well. We don't need to plan anything. In fact, when you don't plan anything, things are less likely to go wrong. When you plan things, sometimes fear is making what you fear the most actually come about. So when we're in the present moment, with kindness, such a beautiful place to hang out. And we stay there. Then what do we do? Oh my goodness. Don't do anything. This is rest time. Just, what does Metta the dog do? What's it trying to aim for? Just does it, that's all. Just let loving kindness drive your car. your vehicle, your meditation. Just stop and see what happens. Always go in and in and in. Never on to the next stage. In and in and in. See how much you can go in. That's why it's called insight meditation. So not insight, it's inside meditation. People just don't pronounce it wrong. Inside meditation. Anyway, so that's enough talking. Now let us actually do something for a change, or rather not do anything. So if you would like to please make sure that you're sitting down comfortably. Make sure that Sam and Vi are there together. And that you have met the dog as you go for your journey up Meditation Mountain. Okay, here we stop. I was going to say here we go, but no. This usually people stop at the end of a journey, but in meditation we stop at the beginning of a journey. So stopping here, we check. I check, how is my body? Poor old body. Always busy doing stuff for others. Now I'm looking after you. This is quality time between you and your own bodily frame. Look down at my legs. How are you going down there, legs? Now sometimes asking questions is a skillful means of becoming mindful. When I ask my legs, how are you? My awareness goes down there and I see things, you feel things, because you're paying attention. I'm fine, actually my legs are pretty good. I'm just checking them there, are you okay down there? And they say, yep, we're fine. And I go to my butt, that's pretty good too. But my waist needs a bit of adjusting there. So you go up your body, stage by stage, checking, not assuming, not thinking, oh, this is my posture, it should be okay. No, just checking it's just as good as you can get. Kindness, just like you tuck yourself in. Just now you see the dogs, when they go to sleep, they've got their little basket wherever they sleep, and they just go round and round and round. I don't know why they do that. Round and round and round till they find the most comfortable position, and then they sit down, or rather lie down. Next thing, you just check out your back. How are you doing back? You just stretch. I'm doing a bit of a stretch beginning of meditation. Need to be leant back, leant forward, to the side, to the back. Are you too tight? Back, how can I help you? And just an attitude of caring, of being attentive to the needs of your own posture, instead of telling the body what it should be doing. Just being sensitive to your body. And just acting accordingly. My body needs to be moved, I'll move it. And check in my hands, because where my hands are, that obviously controls where my arms are. I'll check my hands, make sure they're really comfortable. I feel my hands are just really nice. Yeah, I can stay like that for a while. Then check my shoulders, make sure they're really nice and relaxed. Just paying attention, caring, TLC. All that really means is you're aware, you're kind, and things relax. It is not only pragmatic, useful for your own ability to sit for long periods of time. It's also useful you realize how you can relax with a little bit of exercise, repetitive, finding out how to relax your own body, trial and error, mindfulness. All of that, you learn how to relax the body, but it's also the qualities you require to get into deep meditation. The awareness and the kindness, the ability to let go, pay attention, care. So your shoulders really relax, your neck. And my head. Muscles around the eyes and mouth nice and relaxed. Just like sometimes you feel things being pulled apart, being stretched, and just using even imagery, things being pulled and stretched or squashed, I take off all those forces, all those pullings and pushings and squashings, and allow things just to expand. Allow things to take their natural shape, to be free. I think of freedom for my muscles. Think we free just to be, rather than me making you stretch like this or squashed like that. May all my muscles be free and happy and well. And you feel relaxation happening. And it's at this point that loving kindness is always joyful. Feel my body, just a beautiful tingle which I keep pointing out to you. The tingling, the delight of a relaxed body. Not totally relaxed, but most of it is. Because it's important to associate relaxation with joy. It makes you trust relaxation. And you relax deeper. Beautiful, peaceful relaxation. You just linger there as long as you want. And if you want to, just look at your old piezometer. That's amateur stuff. Stillness. Understanding what peace feels like. What is stillness? Peace. Don't theorize about it, just know it. Feel it, experience it. Don't be afraid of deep peace. If you try and control and force it, it will just rebel and run away. So I make this present moment, which is where my peaceometer tends to point me, I make it just a joyful, happy place. Always have my little dog Metta in the present moment. I can feel my peaceometer. The amount of calm, stillness you have, you feel in your mind. You can always experiment. You try thinking of the future, all the nice things you're going to do and all the fearful things, and see that peaceometer that just gets so agitated. Just being in this moment, being kind, having some trust. And you find the peaceometer starts going down. understanding you learn more from the present moment. This is where you learn now, never from the past. And the future is being made right now. It just gives more importance, more value to this moment. And don't try and figure it out, name it. Just experience it in the silence. When you're thinking, it's like talking back to the world. When you're silent, you're listening to her wisdom. Soon the breath will come up if it wants to. When it does, just welcome it. Treat it like a friend, never like a slave. And then your friend will stay with you, will hang out with you for hours. My breath and I, and Upanasati the dog, just comes right up to you. It stays by your side. Oh, I'm going to be quiet now. When I start speaking again, it will be towards the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How peaceful are you? Can you feel kindness? Beautiful, open heart. And have the understanding, the insight of how these all come together. In particular, be honest and find out what worked or what didn't work for you. So we always learn from every meditation. I'm now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Any questions from the audience here before we go on to the ones from people listening in from overseas? Okay, let's try the overseas questions. Excellent, here we go. From USA, from Brisbane, and from no country. Brisbane's not overseas, just the other side of the continent. Anyway. When I meditate afterwards, I am very sensitive to people. Why does this happen, and how can I control not being so sensitive? It depends. Sensitive to people is sometimes a good thing. It means that you're opening up instead of putting yourself in the old concrete bunker because we're afraid what other people think of us. I mean, I was writing today, you don't have to worry about what people are thinking about you. They're so busy, they haven't got time to think about you. It's our modern world. So, you are sensitive to people. That's just your awareness is coming up. It's coming strong. But always have the awareness together with kindness, compassion. So if you are sensitive to people, you know, you can give them kindness, but also that sensitivity with wisdom goes to yourself as well. So sensitive to what you require and what other people require. So you're part of the equation, you're part of the balance. So good to be sensitive to other people, but please, for goodness sake, be sensitive to yourself as well. And if you're sensitive to both and balance it with kindness, compassion, fairness, then there's no problem. So it's not about controlling it, if I get your meaning. It's about just learning how to put some of that sensitivity, direct it to yourself as well as to others. So, you know, your needs also count. When I'm meditating, I feel extremely nauseated, as though my body is experiencing an extreme falling vortex situation. Extreme falling vortex situation. Again, just a little bit more kindness, and you can just make a little suggestion. Just slow down. Just be calm. And then when you do fall, there's no fear there, it's a fear. And just from the fear, the control which comes from the fear, which usually creates that tightness and tension. So, you know, many people experience the fear with nausea. It's just, I don't know why that happens. Maybe it's a medical thing that when you're afraid that, you know, you sort of, all the stuff in your tummy, you sort of just goes out. So that might be able to help you run faster, I don't know, whatever. But anyway, I know nausea is sometimes associated with fear. And so, if that's the case, when you're meditating, your body experiences extreme falling vortex situation, falling into something, Don't resist it. Just go for it. It's perfectly safe. Just see what's on the other end of that big tunnel. Who knows what you might find there. But it's always pretty safe. And anyway, if it's a bit too much for you, a bit too fast, what you can always do is just make these very beautiful resolutions when you start meditating. The old programming your mindfulness. So when you start your meditation, get yourself nice and comfortable. But before you actually go into peaceometer and other stuff or go too deep, you say, when I experience that falling vortex, I will just relax. I'll relax. But you know, when you reprogram, basically rewiring your reactions to things, then you find that the nausea, the negativity, which is with coming from the fear of the unknown, disappears. See what happens. Or if you don't want to fall into that vortex yet, you want to get a bit more solid in your meditation, just say, whenever I start to catch that falling vortex situation, I will just go another path. I'll choose another way. And little by little, you tend to, with your mindfulness, your awareness, you tend to actually see these things happening before they actually happen. It was a simile of a snake which I developed. And always using similes so that people can relate to them and understand them instead of just theories. And that was when I was going in northeast Thailand 40-something years ago. And there was many snakes in the jungles and didn't have any shoes, and flashlights were no good either. But nevertheless, you navigated the paths. But I always remember, because there were snakes around, I'd always make sure that I was on the lookout for them. I was really watching out for snakes, because if they bit you, it was big trouble. So what I used to do is, when you're walking through the jungle, make that resolution, I better look out for snakes. And so if I saw a little twig across the ground, which in the night time you didn't know it was a snake or what it was, or a shadow across the path, you'd go a different way, or you'd jump over it if there was no other way. And that's why you always escape from being bitten by snakes. But if I hadn't set up my mindfulness, that is really important, I've got to watch out for that, then I'd have probably been bitten. It's the same way that, when you are going through meditation, there are some sort of dangers there. Like for you here from Brisbane, the feeling of like going into a falling vortex. Look out for that. Look out for the signs. Before you even get close to it, just so that you see, if I keep going in this direction, this old problem is going to happen again. And then when you see, the old habits coming, you can always take another direction. Anyway, how does one overcome war flashbacks in sleep and awake? Avoidance of the triggers doesn't always work, and avoidance can become like a crutch. What else can I do? This is from someone in the USA, must be a veteran, from some of the things which happened in the war. Is, again, if you do have a flashback, this is trauma. And when you have that trauma, sometimes resisting it, pushing it away, isn't really much of a solution. So I think some of you have heard me say this before, that what is a solution, what has been found to work, and the organization which we have here, which works on this problem, is called the Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. Mostly refugees who have really been through unimaginable sort of tortures and rapes and stuff. But this was a little thing which I suggested, and they've taken it on board, and it works very well. Here's the simile of the opening the door of your heart. Many of you have heard this before, but this is for the gentleman in the United States. Is that when you feel safe, comfortable, so they're reducing as much possibility for fear as possible. When you feel comfortable in your own time, maybe in your house or a temple with people around you you can trust, a little bit of meditation, then you imagine, visualize a little heart in your chest. A Valentine's Day heart, not the heart you see in surgery. Something simple to visualize. And then you imagine these two doors, double doors in the middle of that heart. And you open them up. There inside is the part of you which you are comfortable with, you're not afraid of, which you are happy to live with. The good part of you. And then you look outside, on the floor, rejected, not allowed to come in, all those parts of you which were traumatized, the parts of you which you are terrified of. And you wonder how you could survive those experiences. Or it could be just, bad things which you did for others. So all of those parts of you, they are you. The little child who was badly beaten. The soldier who had to life and death, just kill somebody else. The friend who saw their best mate just blown to smithereens. The mother who lost their child. Whoever that is, you see all those little beings which you're afraid of, terrified, because they're very painful to even just to remember. And they're all outside on the ground, and you're up here in your heart. And then you let the staircase go down from your heart down to the ground. And you invite all those parts of you which have been kept outside, rejected, diminished, stigmatized, afraid of, all those little yous you've kept outside for too long, invite them up. And you can imagine, I've had a pretty good life, but still you can empathize with what it must feel like. All those little yous you're so scared of, you're ashamed of sometimes, terrified of. All those little yous start walking up the staircase. Again, terrified, needing encouragement, needing that beautiful kindness to draw them up and in. When they come up to the top of the staircase, the other part of you, the part which you're comfortable with, embraces the traumatized you. Embraces them. And says, come in, the door of my heart's open to you as well. Allow them in, embrace them, they're part of you. A lot of the problem is trying to keep them out, destroy them, trying to imagine that they didn't exist in the first place, trying to avoid them instead of embracing them. Bring them in. It's a tough thing to do, you can't do it all in one go. When you get ready for that. But that seems to be one of the most amazing ways of overcoming the really bad traumas. Avoidance of them, it's just a band-aid for the time being. That, the triggers, they will come up sooner or later. And so instead we do them the other way with loving kindness, compassion. Because they're part of you. You can't really deny that. So you bring them up. They're part of you. The beautiful kindness, forgiving. And then they make you such a better person. The old story with a truckload of shit. You get so many beautiful flowers and fruits and stuff from the great fertilizer of the suffering. But don't be ashamed of it. Don't stigmatize it. These days we are learning not to stigmatize people. You may be surprised in USA that just a couple of days ago, the last, our government permitted same-sex marriage, not stigmatize the love between people of the same genders. To be able to allow people from different races, religions, different what people call disabilities. People are not quite the same as us. People find it hard to understand and accept, to allow them to come in, to be part, of our human family. And it's just like you, all those parts of your history, the parts you can be ashamed of. I wish I hadn't have done that. I wish I didn't make that stupid choice. I wish I hadn't seen that. wish that hadn't have happened to me. But it did. So don't stigmatize it. Let it come in. And you find that it's the negativity towards it, pushing it away, trying to obliterate it. That was the problem to begin with. So open the door of your heart to your world, to your history, to who you are. It's amazing what happens. A catharsis of acceptance and peace comes from that. So I've talked about that a lot in some of the talks, and apparently it works really well. So give that a go, a try. Okay, anything from over here, from anyone in the room here? Okay, so again, thanks for those questions from overseas. Again, I am just sometimes amazed, all these little things which have come from meditation, from stillness, how that wisdom of stillness has huge effects on people's lives, and just makes the psychology, the healing, just go that bit deeper. All coming from the wisdom born of silence. From compassion, acceptance, embracing, rather than excluding. Okay, so finish off now. Anyone who wants to come and have a chat afterwards, most welcome. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.